Hello and welcome to In the Money Media's continuing coverage, daily coverage this time. First time we've done that of the Keeneland Meet. First time and probably not the last because it's been very well received and we've had a lot of fun doing it. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker. Once again, joined by a man who's a key player at In the Money Media behind the scenes and sometimes in front of the scenes, covering Kentucky Derby stuff over on our website, inthemoneypodcast.com, helping out with the newsletter, which if you want to keep track of all the great content we've got coming on, you should really be subscribed to inthemoneypodcast.com/email, and also on the In the Money Plus side, inthemoneypodcast.com/plus. These are just some of the places you can find the excellent work of Eric DeCoster. Eric, how are you today?
I'm great. Excited to wrap things up here at Keeneland.
Yeah, we got this show, and we'll be back with the final show for the final Friday, and then it's on to Churchill Downs and all that madness last week. We're kind of back to our regularly scheduled programming today with a look at the all-turf pick three. We went the doubles route yesterday just because that's where more of our opinions were. We kicked things off in race number two, where we've got a two-year-old maiden special weight. We're going 5.5 on the turf, and we've got a horse in here who I guess there is some very limited future betting on Royal Ascot two-year-old races, the trouble being there's so many of them, it's very hard to know which horses are going to run in which races, etc. But you would think that Team Coolmore sending out Monterey Bay, the seven runner by Good Magic out of a Galileo Dam, would be one that if runs well here, you might just see over there in the Berkshires in June. Monterey Bay, the name of the beast. Are you with this one or against this one in this baby race, Eric?
You kind of have to be with this one purely because you know Wesley's has one shot in this kind of race. He's only going to get one if he's lucky, get two in. But when it comes to one short, quick turf race at Keeneland, he's going to get one shot. So he's going to put his best in there. And that's what he's done, it sounds like. That's the word I've heard even. This horse doesn't necessarily have the pedigree to do what he's doing here, going 5.5 right away. He's got more of a two-turn pedigree, but it really does not matter because it is Wesley Ward. And if he's going to put that horse in that race, then I think he's on the right track.
Is it a single situation for you here, or would you try to pull in any others? I think a bet like this all-turf pick three does allow you, especially if you vary your stakes a little bit, to potentially use two. What were you going to do wager approach-wise?
I'm comfortable with the one, but I think it's fair to like others as well. If you think that this horse is no good, I think there's quite a few other decent routes to go. One horse I found really intriguing, maybe outside the second or third choice, is the 11 Madrock. Mm-hmm. His dam, Holly Hundy, was pretty quick on her best day out in California. Loved the flat five when Santa Anita ran those during 2019 into 2020. She was very talented on her best day, especially early on as a three-year-old. This one's by Constitution, so that doesn't necessarily scream turf sprinter, but the work tab is pretty sharp. Tyler Gaffney-Owen rides for the first time for more Florida connections. That's a very intriguing combo there. So if he's getting aboard a firster like this, that tells me there's a little bit more than the form is suggesting.
Yeah, and I mean, you've got under the radar connections as well. This homebred, very, very interesting horse, 12-1 on the morning line. That would be extremely usable. My fear about the Ward runner in here is pedigree based, because you've got a dam who's produced other runners too, none of whom have won first out. But I'm inclined to do what you did, and maybe in the exact same words, and say with Ward, it just doesn't matter. And the one thing I will say is I want this horse to be bet and bet hard. If there's any market weakness, I could see spinning and going in a different direction, because it really does seem like the tote has told the valuable tale in these races where we don't have any sort of clock to go by. So that's my one caveat. I will take another look and see. I love your case on Madrock. I'd love to sneak that one onto some tickets. And then another one I think it's probably worth doing a tote and paddock check on in this spot is the Mark Cassie runner. I mean, this is a lovely pedigree here on number 12 Into Diamonds, being by Into Mischief out of a Warfront dam. And these are connections that love to run at Ascot and have had some success over there, our friends over at Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners. So it just made me wonder. And again, we'll get signal here. We'll be able to see the horse, and we'll be able to get some signal from the tote. But wouldn't surprise me at all if Into Diamonds is the real deal, and the fact that he's with Mark Cassie too, who's obviously had some of the most notable Ascot success of any U.S. trainer with Tepin a few years ago. That was another one I wanted to mention for discussion. Can you see my case on Into Diamonds in here?
I do, and you're right on that pedigree. I remember his damn Diamond Sparkles. You know, she was beating a length and change in the Natalma when she was flying late as a 2-year-old, and she's graded stakes placed beyond that. She has a hell of a, you know, damn herself. The very talented Diamonds and Rubies, who was a Group 1 winner back in mid-2010. So there's a lot of pedigree there, a lot of turf there, and probably a little bit more short because Diamond Sparkles won in her second start, and she debuted in July over in Europe. So there's a little bit more win early pedigree in the 12 Into Diamonds.
Great info. Eric there channeling his inner Nick Tamara with going back in these generations of the bloodlines. Is this stuff, did you study that up, or did you actually remember some of these dams from the racetrack? Because my problem is it goes out of my head, and then I have to look at the paper, and then I'll remember the races sometimes, like that Natalma run. But I do not have the recall when I look at it at first. I need to do the digging.
Yeah, well, it's funny you mention it. I'm at a point where, you know, I'm still younger, and so I've been growing up watching racing for however long now. It's been a long time, but I'm getting to the point where I feel old because I'm seeing horses who I swore ran a year ago that all of a sudden have babies, and there's quite a few in here. I mean, the one that I just specifically mentioned really freaked me out there, Diamond Sparkles, because I was like, there's just no way that she has a child racing right now. And I'm like, I swear, I was just talking about her with someone else yesterday, being like, oh, she's a daughter of Diamonds and Rubies. No, she now has a granddaughter.
Her damn side pedigrees will make you feel old. There's no two ways about it.
Correct.
I have that mind chatter every time looking through. All right, let's pivot. We're going to the opposite end of the spectrum here now. Mile and a half on the turf in race number 5 for this allowance race for the boys. We've got a field of 10 going postward. Where's your eye drawn, my friend?
My eye is initially drawn to the 9 Champagne Juan. Wednesday's show, I talked about a Christophe Clement horse in similar race, similar condition, going a mile and a half on the grass. But this horse, I like, because he can get the distance, obviously, because he has talent, but more because of who he was only a half length off of last time out. The winner of that last race, Utah Beach, came back at Keeneland in a 2 other than and won for fun. I mean, this is a true graded stakes caliber turf horse in my mind. And the fact he's only a half length off trying to close at him is really intriguing to me. And now Jose Ortiz has just done so many good things at this meet. You're always impressed by a guy like that, but I feel like he's really taken it a step up in his riding qualities, decision making, his clock this past few weeks. So that really excites me. So I love him on top. There's a few others I'll mix in. I'll let you go first, but I think that's a horse I really, really like heading into this spot.
I get it, and it's definitely on my short list too. I made the 10 Truly Quality my top pick in this spot. I think this horse is interesting coming here, and it's situational and race design. I love the fact that you've got a horse that's got the tactical speed to be in an attacking position. You know, I know that not necessarily an ideal draw being in the 10, but the way this race looks to unfold early, I think Giroux's going to be able to get him into position. And he's got a really nice closing kick as well. So I think might just have the opportunity to get the jump on the likes of Sergeant Pepper. Great name. A hunch play for my dad, perhaps, but not one that I loved situationally here. You know, 5 and 6 are terrific closers, but 10 has some real late kick too, and is going to just be in a better attacking spot early. So I was mainly going to mess around with the 10 and the 10 and the 9 in here. And I just think they're going to get the best trips more so than some of the other horses that are going to take money. Who are your other uses along with your top pick number 9, Champagne Juan?
I liked the 10 Truly Quality as well. He was kind of my, when I was flip-flopping between these two, obviously he's got some good numbers, but it's just really the mile and a half. He needs it. You go to his earlier races, he's crying out for more ground. The miles he's been handling has had way too short. So I've just been kind of waiting for this day with him. Unfortunately, he catches a group of other horses I like, and that includes the other one I kind of like, number 5, Cyber Ninja. He did put up a decent 86 buyer last time out, different circumstances, but that's also just not his game. He wants to do this mile and a half thing. He hasn't gotten to go this far yet. A lot of mile and 3/8 efforts, whether that's up in New York or 2 back at Gulfstream. But he also has caught, I think, the best class of anyone in this race. Obviously, I mentioned Utah Beach earlier, but career-wise, Cyber Ninja has seen the likes of Henley's Joy, Harry Hood, who's got decent allowance, slow-graded stakes form, and even deeper, Catch That Party in Francesco Clemente, who I believe won a graded stakes at Del Mar last fall, probably the biggest name out of that. So he's caught horses, hung with them well, gets just the slightest relief in my eyes. I don't know if there's any of those types in here, so I think that benefits him.
Clemente won that. Was it just an allowance race? But it was if it was an allowance race, it was a salty one that could have been a stake on the Pegasus undercard too. So yeah, there's some real quality there, no doubt about it. 9, 10, and 5 I wrote down for you, and 10 and 9 for me. As we pivot to race number 8, we've got these 3-year-old fillies in the allowance ranks going 1 3/16 on the turf. When it comes to this all turf pick 3 on Thursday, Eric, we ask you the key question: how are we going to get paid?
I don't think it'll be easy, but we're certainly going to try. That's what we're here to do. I thought this was a very tough race because you have a lot of horses coming from a lot of places. And how I saw the races visually in time on replays don't match up necessarily with what multiple figure makers thought of the race. So that always is a little concerning to me. I always trust my eye a little bit more because I know I can maybe squeeze a little value that way. But regardless, that's kind of where I'm at in this race. That makes it a lot tougher. I think a lot of eyes are going to flow to number 5, Royal Wintour. Obviously, she has a really nice win. 2 back, she lost to a future stakes winner in Vivaviv. So she's doing it all right, but I don't think that she's maybe a standout because I think there's other good form in here. There's a bunch of others, but 2 others I want to specifically target are the 10, Janie Creed, who's going to be probably a big price, and the 11, Tarnima. Janie Creed... What first caught my eye was Luis Saez getting aboard. He hasn't had the kind of meet he's had at Keeneland. You know, everyone's due for a down year, I guess. But even a down year for him's not bad. He's got a lot of seconds and thirds to go along with those 9 wins heading into the weekend. But what I like is that she knows how to close. And what I like is that she's going back to grass, because I think she had really good grass form early on 2-year-old races. It seems like she likes the surface. She's always presenting a run. And it's hard to do that at Turfway sometimes. So I give her a lot of, you know, I'll let some of those losses go because I know what she was trying to do at Turfway. And it might just be easier here, especially when you have the capable hands of Luis Saez aboard. And then Tarnima is that kind of that visual horse. I thought she would have run a much bigger number in that last race at Fairgrounds. I know the time wasn't great, and that's what hurts the figure. But visually, I mean, she just stomped away after losing a very salty maiden race upon debut. So I think that she's just doing it all right. And obviously you can't knock the barn at all.
Tarnima was one of the ones on my list. And I would say the other thing that maybe, I don't know if this is accurate or not, but part of the reason why the visual is a little bit better than the figure there is she just didn't get away from there with alacrity and then still managed to run very efficiently through, shaping like one for whom this added distance is going to be a benefit. So I wanted some Tarnima on the tickets, but I was with the favorite, who I feel like you conspicuously left out. So I'll have to come back and ask you your thoughts on Style Points, because I just thought she was going to end up in a very nice attacking position. She's done some good running in the fastest part of some fast-paced stakes races out there, down there, I should say, really, in Florida. And coming here... Just looked to fit like a glove and was going to get a good trip. So I was looking to mess around with the 9 and the 11. I did have the 5 in the mix more as a B horse, with the thought there being that, you know, just maybe with the 5 and the 11, I'll probably put them both as Bs just because of the trickiness of first time against winners. And meanwhile, you have this this stakes type horse in Style Points, who I think sets the standard of the form in here. But yeah, clearly you didn't love. Would you have as a backup, would you have anywhere with Style Points, or are you just going to do this one, the 10, 11, and 5?
Yeah, no, I'll keep her involved. I think this is a race where thankfully, with how we're looking at it, the all-turf pick 3, if we're just going to take our friend Wesley Ward in the first leg, we're going to be able to take some liberties here. I think that's how many people will approach it, and I think that's the right way to approach it. I can't knock Style Points a whole lot because she does have the true graded stakes form, but I have just been waiting for her to kind of separate. Even when she broke her maiden, it felt like there was a little bit more there, and I think that she's benefited from some really solid trips in these last 2 races. Not to say she can't get that again, but I think she's just been put in all the right positions And this is the perfect spot for her, no doubt. This is the most winnable spot. That's why I always like to phrase it when you're
yep.
you know, dropping back down, the most winnable spot. But I do just think there's other fillies who aren't worth discrediting, especially given they'll have less money given to them because of Style Points' graded stakes resume.
Yeah, that's totally fair. So should I bother to list as a backup in your picks or leave out completely with Style Points?
Absolutely. I, at the end of the day, she'll be on my ticket, but she's not my preferred winner or cup of tea in the race.
Makes perfect sense. Eric, appreciate you. Folks should also check out Eric's Monster Pod appearance over on the YouTube channel and all the Monster Pod videos we have. It's funny calling them Monster Pods because they're really mini pods when they appear on YouTube. But later in the week, we're going to be releasing them as audio. And then there's also, I don't know if I told you this, the audio version of the Monster, Eric, is sponsored by our friends at the Preakness Future Wager. So as a thank you to being a guest on that show, we'll make a $100 bet for you. So I'll come back and bother you once we have the field for the Preakness Future bet and get your thoughts on who you want to put your money on there and a chance to make a little something, which is always nice. So we want folks to check out that Preakness Future wager, which I think goes live on the 26th, so not too far from now. So be on the lookout for an email from me later in the week.
Beautiful. That's what, as we know, I love me a future wager. The Derby, you know, we're still alive in some facets. So
what do you got cooking? What's in your portfolio?
The big one I'm holding on to that's not going to happen, it seems like, is domestic product. I hammered on him a little bit after he broke his maiden going a mile and an eighth at Aqueduct. And that's a pretty little ticket that I just don't think is going to hit at a big price.
He's going to be in the gate, though, isn't he?
He's in the gate, which is the biggest part. I mean, he made it from that part to that part. So I wish they paid to get something to the gate, even if it was like 20%. I'd feel a lot better.
I like that idea. Yeah, I've got two live tickets. I've got a little Fierceness at 4 and a little Honor Marie at 33. So we'll see if either of those can end up getting us anywhere. But the Preakness Future Wager is the one we're going to be talking about this weekend, so stay tuned for that. Thank you, Eric, one more time. Thanks to our friends at Keeneland for sponsoring these shows. Reminder, we've got the Keeneland Horses of Racing Age sale on Friday. If you're in the area, go by and check it out. Really interesting, cool place to have a sale, and only going to be more so when this renovation gets done. Sounds like about a year and a half on that one. Looking forward to seeing what that looks like. Looking forward to talking more about the sale in the final Keeneland Daily Show we'll do for Friday. For Eric, I'm PTF. May you win all your photos.